The following is part 4 of reading from Prabhupada Meditations.
Thankful to Lord Krishna for sending Srila Prabhupada. I feel fortunate to have contacted him, and therefore remembrances of personal association with Srila Prabhupada, not allowing those times to be forgotten, are themselves acts of gratitude. The concept of Guru Dakshin is meant to prevent the disciple from lapsing into ingratitude. We don't think we can ever repay Srila Prabhupada for what he has given, but we should make the attempt. As you have learned this knowledge from me, now you should be kind and give it to others. It is not enough to feel thankful while I keep the gift for myself. Since I have received blessings, I am obliged to give them to others.
Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a perfect example of grateful person. He never forgets even the smallest favorable service rendered to him. Srila Prabhupada writes, anyone who addresses the Lord immediately attracts the attention of the Lord, who always remains obliged to him. Nectar of Devotion, page 166. As the Lord is the epitome of gratefulness, so he is pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada often expressed deep appreciation to his disciples for the services they were rendering to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. The fact is that Prabhupada's disciples were carrying out his vision in an attempt to reciprocate with him and to please him. This dynamic relationship was observed by the scholar Larry Sin in his foreword to Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. What springs from page after page is the willing devotion of young men and women to a man whom they admire for his deep faith and humility, not his aristocratic or forceful demands.
Srila Prabhupada also set the best example of a grateful disciple in his own devotion for Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Whatever success he accomplished, Prabhupada said, was all due to the mercy of his spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada saw Krishna's mercy upon him in many ways. He once expressed gratitude to the United States of America as the place where his mission first flourished. Prabhupada said, America has been so good to give me money, men, everything. I have no designation that this is my country, but because they have given me so much facility, I cannot forget my obligation to them. I want to make them happy, and through them, the world. We should not be so dull as to ask, what should I thank him for? We thank him for teaching us the invaluable art of offering food first to the Lord and then eating spiritual remnants. We thank him for uplifting us from an animal-like life to a life of refined, hopeful humanity. I thank him for allowing me to write praises of Prabhupada and Krishna. We thank him for making us satisfied and happy. Many of our students were dry and morose previous to their coming to Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada writes. But having come into the contact with devotees, they are now dancing like jubilant peacocks.
The mind of the Acharya, 4.7. Vaishnavir Kriya Mudra Vigyena Bujhai. One cannot understand the mind or the activities of the Vaishnava. This means that a pure devotee should never be judged by material standards. And when we associate with him, we should not take him for granted. Don't think he is an ordinary person. The depth of his love for Krishna is a mystery to us. On the other hand, I always assumed that there was a normal, intelligent exchange going on between Srila Prabhupada and I. A disciple may exaggerate that because Prabhupada is mystical and dear to Krishna, therefore at every moment some strange vibration is coming from him, and he is signaling to us in unknown ways. Prabhupada, however, always emphasized the normal exchanges of intelligence. He mocked the fable of a guru who transferred knowledge to his disciple by electric shock and then said he had lost all of his own knowledge. Srila Prabhupada always talked about Krishna in an authorized way and with realization, and he spoke of pure devotees and devotional service.
But he didn't talk about himself as someone special or more advanced. Neither did he tell us exactly what he was thinking in his inner mind, although sometimes when disciples were talking among themselves, they would speculate about the mind of the Acharya. When we were with Srila Prabhupada, he was always present in a real and personal way. He was our friend and teacher, a nectarine pure devotee of the Lord. In reverence, we accepted the fact that Srila Prabhupada's devotion to Krishna was beyond us, and we were also happy that Srila Prabhupada was with us as our venerable and lovable spiritual master. But there were other aspects of his personality which were dear to us, although they didn't quite fit in with standard conceptions we may have had of a pure devotee or a spiritual master. One example is Prabhupada's childlike nature.
One time I accompanied Srila Prabhupada and Rai Ram on a visit to the lawyer to see about Swamiji's immigration status. We were in the waiting room discussing the legal case when Swamiji became absorbed in playing with a lamp that was in the office. This lamp was in the shape of a ship's stern and it had a small propeller. While we were speaking of immigration legalities, Swamiji reached over and began spinning the propeller on the boat. It was as if he reserved the right at any time to drop out of the reality which others were taking so seriously. It reminded you of liberated souls you had read about like the Kumaras, and it indicated that we do not know the mind of the Acharya.
Another time, Swamiji and several devotees were on a tour of a building in Manhattan with the idea to purchase it. The real estate agent led Swamiji through the rooms, explaining everything, but at one point we noticed that Swamiji wasn't with us. He had been left behind somewhere, and when we found him, he was in a remote part of a room playing with a foot pedal of an old-fashioned sewing machine. He was standing by himself and operating it with his foot, exempting himself for the time being from the heavy real estate talks. I've also seen Prabhupada sit in the back seat of a car and crank the window up and down repeatedly. And I have seen him move his finger across a fogged window pane and make playful marks. In a detached way, Prabhupada liked to hum and sing to himself. Whatever Prabhupada did, it was an answer to the question made by Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita: how does a transcendentalist walk, how does he sit, and how does he speak? Sometimes the paramahamsas or swan-like persons float on the water of the material world and appear to be like children. Sometimes they act like madmen and don't communicate at all, although Srila Prabhupada never did that. And most often they are teachers with their finger poised, with their finger raised, in the Jnana Mudra pose, instructing the conditioned soul. If a disciple intruded too much or assumed to know the mind of Prabhupada, he got a rebuff. This would serve to remind him not to assume that he knew everything about his spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. I experienced this one time when I went with Prabhupada to see the lawyer on Chambers Street in Manhattan. My assignment was to bring Swamiji back to the storefront at 26 Second Avenue after the meeting was over. I was happy with this mission and concerned that I get Swamiji back safely. I tried to guide him in crossing the streets and protect him from the traffic, but his tendency was to rush before I did and dart across the avenue. At one point I remarked, "This city is like a jungle, except there are no snakes." Swamiji replied, "What about Mr. Payne?"
Then on the bus I sat beside him and tried to keep my mind purified and not spaced out. I wanted to be a good but menial companion and not pester him with a lot of philosophical questions. When we got near our bus stop, I said, "Swamiji, this is it." And I stood to ring the buzzer, but Swamiji said, "No, there is one more stop." I sat down, and at the next stop, on his indication, I pulled the wire buzzer.
When we were walking the last few blocks, I realized that this was the end of my special mission of intimacy with Swamiji. My main idea was just to deliver him to his room safely, but I couldn't resist from asking him a question. So I leaned over while we were walking and said, "Swamiji, the Ramakrishna mission has spread themselves very effectively. So how is that that they've done it if they're not bona fide, and how can we become effective also?" Swamiji didn't answer me at all. although I had spoken loudly and clearly. By now we were standing on the curb of Second Avenue, waiting to cross, with the storefront in full view. I felt humiliated and had to swallow my question in silence. I couldn't say, "Did you hear what I said?" or "What did you think of what I said?" For some reason unknown to me, he had decided to ignore me. I realized that this was his right, but it felt very heavy. I thought I must have displeased him, and I felt a great distance between us. But I continued my mission and went across Second Avenue with Swamiji and brought him to his room.
The episode left me thinking, what happened? What did I do wrong? I told myself, don't make a big thing out of this. He can do that if he wants. Now when I think of it, I guess that I overstepped my bounds. I had become proud that I had successfully brought Swamiji home, and I tried to enjoy his association by asking an impressive question. At least his silence came to me as a good slap. He reduced me to what I actually was supposed to be, the menial boy who was accompanying him home. I should have been satisfied doing that, relishing it for it was. So what if he did not answer my so-called philosophical question? What right had I anyway to ask about the Ramakrishna mission or how the Krishna consciousness movement is going to be spread?
As time passed, I accepted that rebuff and began to relish it. As Prabhupada would say, the guru is not a pet. I became more assured. He was always caring for you, but he may teach you in his own way, so take the lessons. Srila Prabhupada meditations are a way of lining up with him. 4.8. As a unique individual, Srila Prabhupada expressed his attraction to Krishna in ways which were particular to him. Although I am his disciple, it will not be possible for me to mirror Prabhupada's devotion. For one thing, I don't have the capacity he has. But also, it might be argued that I am different because I am also an individual. If, however, we minimize the ways in which we do connect favorably with our spiritual master, we may come to regard him merely in an official way. The more of Prabhupada's teachings and traits which I follow, the better it is for me. When I am lined up with Srila Prabhupada, thinking exactly as he's taught, then I'm secure in following the parampara. If I have to draw inspiration for my spiritual activities from other teachers, then I will be on uncertain ground. For example, say I don't agree with Prabhupada's emphasis on book distribution, and to support my own position, I cite the example of previous acharyas who don't seem to emphasize book distribution or who did not emphasize preaching in an outward way. There are several difficulties when I do this. One is that I run the risk of sliding back in my relationship with my own spiritual master. Furthermore, I'm unsure of my relationship with the previous acharyas and whether their example exactly applies to me.
Lining up with Srila Prabhupada cannot be forced. It may be a fact of nature that I am not inspired equally by all of Srila Prabhupada's programs and way of teaching. Neither did Srila Prabhupada demand everything of each disciple. He sometimes indicated that he was satisfied if one simply followed the basics. But the more I follow, the better it is for me. I follow Srila Prabhupada as much as possible out of self-interest. Srila Prabhupada never scorned self-interest, but said that it had to be purified. I want to make myself a better servant of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, to situate myself free of designations, vimsi and sense gratification, and I want to enter the meadow of eternal servitorship. That is my real self-interest, to love Guru and Krishna. The more I feel confident in relating to Srila Prabhupada, the more I will receive Krishna consciousness in a realized way.
Prabhupada meditations help me to do this by recalling the incidents and details of my life with him and meditating on his meaning. I do it because I do it to become more favorable to him. I do it so that I can gradually overcome resistances and lukewarm attitudes that I may have towards Srila Prabhupada. Because we're individuals, even in the spiritual world, it's inevitable that there will be certain traits and teachings of Srila Prabhupada to which I will be especially drawn, gratefully and wholeheartedly. Srila Prabhupada writes, there are 9 standard items of devotional service, and a candidate can make his choice to adopt any 1, 2, 3, 4, or all of the items together as he likes, since all the services are intended, are rendered to the Absolute, their Absolute, and there is no material difference of quality. That's easy journey to other planets. Srila Prabhupada also said that a spiritual master should be expert in finding out what his disciple is best suited for, and thus he assigns him, you should work in the editorial department, you should work in the cooking department, etc.
Let me therefore be a department man in his movement and a specialist in certain items of the bhakti process. As I work in my favorite way, let me do it according to the way he taught. Let my whole self be offered to him. As I observe the many aspects of Srila Prabhupada, I see that I cannot personally follow all of them, such as how to raise children in Krishna consciousness, earning money and giving it to Krishna conscious projects, being a king for the Lord like Pratap Rudra Maharaj, defeating the materialist scientist. Yet let me be at least a basic student of those teachings of Prabhupada. Let me appreciate those who are expert specialists in various fields, and let me praise the glories of my teacher.
The eternal residence of Vrindavan, 4.9. Vaishnava literature teaches that a devotee should aspire to go back to Goloka Vrindavan, and he should choose a resident of Vrindavan and follow his example. I first heard this in 1967 while typing Prabhupada's dictation of Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. I was curious about following a resident of Vrindavan, so I wrote to Prabhupada asking for more information. In a letter of March 21, 1967, he remarked, "For ourselves, when we are in the perfect stage of devotional service, we can know our eternal relation with Krishna, and as such, one of the associates of Lord Krishna becomes our ideal leader. This acceptance of leadership by one of the eternal associates of the Lord is not artificial. Do not, therefore, try it at present. It will automatically be revealed to you in proper time." After that, I saw my question as premature, put it out of my mind, and got back to work doing practical service for the Swami. But nowadays, when devotees read this statement about the eternal resident of Vrindavan, the question often comes up, are we ready for this now? In his 1967 letter, Swamiji warned a neophyte against seeking for the eternal resident, but the Chaitanya Charitamrita recommends it. Quote, "If one wants to engage in spontaneous loving service, he must follow the inhabitants of Vrindavan and constantly engage in devotional service within his mind. The devotee should always think of Krishna within himself, and one should choose a very dear devotee who is a servitor of Krishna in Vrindavan. One should constantly engage
in topics about that servitor and his loving relationship to Krishna, and one should live in Vrindavan. However, if one is physically unable to go to Vrindavan, he should mentally live there." Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 22, 158, 160. So some of Srila Prabhupada's senior disciples have started to address the matter in a mature way. They advise us that while we should never imitate advancement, we should try to reach the stage of Raganuga Bhakti as soon as possible. In Raganuga Bhakti, one continues to follow the rules and regulations, sadhana, but he constantly hears of Krishna and Krishna's associates, and he starts to develop attachment for them. This may lead to attraction to a particular resident of Vrindavan, as recommended in the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
When this topic comes up in conversation, I think of Srila Prabhupada and how he may be considered the eternal resident of Vrindavan whom we should follow. This isn't a concoction on my part, and neither is it meant to replace the teaching that one should follow Nanda Maharaj or the Gopas or other eternal residents of Vrindavan. Once in India, some of Prabhupada's disciples said They thought he was the eternal resident of Vrindavan whom they could follow. Prabhupada did not elaborate on the point, but he affirmed their sentiment. Now that Srila Prabhupada has disappeared from the world in his Vapu form, it remains somewhat of a mystery as to when we will meet up with him again. He is a liberated soul, and therefore he has a place in the pastimes of Krishna. We have also read in a song by Narottama Das Thakur that he aspired to be in the form of a Gopi Manjari, along with his spiritual master, assisting the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. These secrets are quite beyond me at present, but I can put my understanding in a simple form. Since the liberated spiritual master is in Goloka Vrindavan, it stands to reason that if we follow him, we will also come to be in his presence in Vrindavan, provided we reach the perfect stage. And yet, the next life meeting with the spiritual master remains, at least for me, highly theoretical. This much I can say with personal conviction. I wish to always hear about Krishna from Srila Prabhupada, and I want to think that Prabhupada is the eternal resident of Vrindavan whom I should follow. Krishna Das Kaviraj says that the Vrindavan resident should be a very dear devotee. That certainly fits Srila Prabhupada, who is very dear to Krishna on this earth. The servitor is also supposed to be an associate of Krishna in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada is from Vrindavan, both within the context of Vrindavan, India, where he resided at the Radha Damodar temple, in the Prabhupada Samadhi and the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and he is also a resident in the eternal Vrindavan. He is the teacher of eternal Vrindavan in this world. He has spread the glories of Vrindavan far and wide.
What's really on my mind is this. I want to know whether the 1966 pastimes and other pastimes of Srila Prabhupada as we knew them, whether they are eternal. Did Prabhupada, the eternal servitor, appear within this material world in a temporary lila? But how little we know. What is eternality? Even if you define it for me, I cannot comprehend it. All I know is that Srila Prabhupada came here and taught us of eternal Vrindavan. And I know that I can, if I concentrate and lead the proper life, think of him now and worship him and follow his orders.
We're in the middle of the Prabhupada meditation item called the eternal resident of Vrindavan. Krishna Das Kaviraj advises that one should constantly engage in topics about the servitor and his loving relationship to Krishna. This would seem to be an approval of Prabhupada meditations. When I think of Srila Prabhupada singing in the kirtan and I read about his Krishna and meditate on the faith he has instilled in me to be a servitor of the Lord, I think this is good enough for me. Krishna Das Kaviraj even advises that if one awakens his attraction for an eternal resident, he is not to be checked by ordinary standards. Quote, when such covetousness is awakened, one's intelligence no longer depends on the instruction of Shastra, revealed scriptures, logic, or argument.
I do not claim that I comprehend Srila Prabhupada as the eternal resident of Vrindavan, but I think that it fulfills the purport regarding serving Krishna in Vrindavan in a particular way. Actually, I should probably not even be discussing these topics, but be content with the original instructions Prabhupada gave me. It will be automatically revealed to you in proper time. Srila Prabhupada, please forgive my impertinence. Please keep me engaged in your eternal service, wherever and whatever that may be.
That's the end of that topic. We went as far as we could. Love and the Pirate's Scarf, 4.11. In the beginning, I wanted to tell him, I feel I have a loving relationship with you. One of the first ways I expressed this was when I told him I felt obliged to attend all his classes. This came up when I had to miss a weekend to visit my parents in Avalon, New Jersey. Swamiji, I won't be able to attend classes for the next 2 days because I have to visit with my mother and father. That's all right. I said, the reason I'm telling you is because I don't want to do anything without your permission. Swamiji had never assumed any control over my activities, but when I spelled out my feeling of obligation to him, he smiled. He wanted us to surrender. In his lectures, he would say, "Just like these boys who are with me, they're grown up, but they don't do anything without my permission." They will say, "Swamiji, may I have a piece of fruit?" And I will say, "Of course, it's in the refrigerator." They could take it, but the etiquette is to first ask the spiritual master.
But sometimes when you make a gesture of surrender, it turns out to be a mistake. Then the guru has to correct you, and you have to accept it. It is a sign that the relationship is becoming more developed. One of the first times Prabhupada corrected me, he did it without saying a word. I was in his room when he was unwrapping a parcel he had received from India. I don't remember the content, but it was wrapped in a piece of saffron cloth about the size of a handkerchief. Swamiji put this cloth aside as if it discarded. I looked at it and said, "Can I have that?" He said, "Yes." And I took it as a prize.
The next morning, when I came to Swamiji's morning class, I had tied the saffron handkerchief around my neck like a pirate's bandana. Part of my motive was pure whimsy to create a new clothing fashion, but I also wanted to show the Swami that I was his man, and so I wore his cloth. But saffron kerchiefs around the neck are not part of the brahmachari dress. While lecturing on the Bhagavatam, Swamiji noticed the scarf, and he looked a bit alarmed. His glance was clear, and so I removed the kerchief and never wore it again. That might have become a standard in ISKCON, and nobody would know how it began. Got shot down in the beginning.
Srila Prabhupada liked to exchange gestures of love, but he did not like concoctions. Years later, when he heard that some of his disciples were taking the used Brahman thread that had been worn by the temple deity and putting it on their own wrist, he said it was a concoction. The sentiment behind these gestures was nice, but we should be willing to do it in a way that actually pleases Prabhupada and Krishna. This becomes a delicate matter when a newcomer is an artist or a free spirit and wants to serve Krishna in his own way. You want to tell them that their sentiment is nice, but you also have to inform them sooner or later. This is not the way we do it in Krishna consciousness. Swamiji bypassed all that just by giving me a look, and I was glad to get up that easy. I thought, okay, that's cool. No more pirate scarf.
Someone brought this up to me in a letter or talking, that he was reading Prabhupada Meditations and he liked this. And then I thought, I didn't remember it at first, and then I did. And I thought, how valuable that we wrote these things down, or they'll just get forgotten completely. Waiting to remember. By following Srila Prabhupada's way, one is always under his protection, but it sometimes becomes an unthinking practice. My forgetfulness of Srila Prabhupada is like this. I don't forget to follow his order to chant 16 rounds and follow the four rules, but neither do I remember him in a lively way. Maybe once, very early in the morning, I'll feel confident and have faith and be able to express Prabhupada appreciation for half an hour. But then I turn to my morning duties, go chant japa, and that also may not go so well. After that, maybe once or twice during the entire day, despite attempting to do it, will I again be able to enter his presence and speak. And so I wait and seek relief from forgetfulness of Prabhupada. And so I wait and seek relief for forgetfulness.
Today, while struggling in this way, I thought of example of Arjuna, who even after he had heard Lord Krishna's instructions on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, forgot all that he had heard. This happened after the disappearance of the Lord Krishna from the earth. Arjuna saw many bad omens and felt the loss of his own powers. He had also lost the enlightenment which he had attained when Krishna had spoken the Bhagavad Gita to him. At the depths of despair, Arjuna finally remembered again and became attracted to the instructions of Govinda. Arjuna's constant remembrance of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna rapidly increased his devotion, and as a result all the trash in his thoughts subsided. Because of the Lord's pastimes and activities, and because of his absence, it appeared that Arjuna forgot the instructions left by the Personality of Godhead. But factually, this was not the case, and again he became the Lord of his senses. Bhagavatam 1:15, 29, and 30.
What is that end? Lord of his senses. Srila Prabhupada comments, since the Lord is absolute, deep meditation upon him is as good as yoga trance. But what does this mean to me? When will I be able to remember Prabhupada constantly? It doesn't seem possible. And yet I am not satisfied to just run on automatic, following Prabhupada without deep conscious intentions. Here's something else, which Srila Prabhupada has written about Arjuna, which may offer help. Quoting from a purport, 1:5:28. The feeling of separation from the Lord is undoubtedly painful to the devotee, but because it is in connection with the Lord, it has a specific transcendental effect which pacifies the heart. Feelings of separation are also sources of transcendental bliss, and they are never comparable to contaminated material feelings of separation. That's nice. Okay. We're going to read from part 4. Nostalgia Craze, this is called. I want to go back to Swamiji's room at 26 Second Avenue as much as I am able. Someone might accuse me of thinking too much of the good old days, but I think it's my prerogative to be more attached to memories of Swamiji in 1966 than to any other memories. Lord Krishna's devotees in Vrindavan favor the good old days when Krishna was living with them, and they sometimes even criticize the Lord's devotees in other places. So I think it's not just sentimentality on my part that I lament the loss of simplicity and my inability to be with Prabhupada as I used to at 26 Second Avenue. It's a fact.
It's a fact that toward the end of Prabhupada's pastimes, I lost access to him. I remember one time when Srila Prabhupada was visiting the New York ISKCON skyscraper in 1976. He was leaving for his morning car ride and his GBC men pressed forward to get in the car with him. I went forward too and made it right to the back door of the car, but there was no more room. Rameshwar Maharaj, the last one in, apologized. I am sorry, but Prabhupada asked me to go.
I was just thinking, you know, how ISKCON praises Jayananda. So there's one devotee, Vijayatma, who knew Jayananda as a householder when he joined the San Francisco temple, and he did so many things there. And then Jayananda was asked to join Tamal Krishna Maharaj's bus parties. So he left his wife, and he started wearing saffron, I think, too. And then, then he came back again to San Francisco, and Vijayatma says that we didn't like Jayananda as much in his being a traveling brahmachari as we did. We want Jayananda as the part of the San Francisco temple and his pastimes like that.
Like Vrindavan and Dwarka.
Yeah, they sort of like that. What is this Jayananda brahmachari with the big sannyasis? It was also during that New York stay that Prabhupada made his famous visit to Gita Nagari. I shouldn't complain about these things because I had much more access than most. I could have included myself in the Radha Damodar bus that took Prabhupada to Gita Nagari. Instead, I spent the day in the 55th Street Temple reading his books and feeling sorry for myself. I had rationalized that there were too many devotees going to Gita Nagari. The living quarters would be inconvenient, and I would probably get only a very limited time to to be with Srila Prabhupada.
Another time when all the devotees went to India to be with Prabhupada, the same thing happened. After the main festivals at Mayapur in Vrindavan, Prabhupada went for a week-long lecture program in Hyderabad. Hundreds of disciples went with him and I was also free to go. But I didn't want to it because it would be too inconvenient. I knew I wouldn't get much of his association, and everywhere there would be crowds and the weather was too hot. I declined. It wouldn't be worth it. In Srila Prabhupada's last year, I visited him 4 times, commuting between Los Angeles and India. But I missed out on his pastimes in England in September of that year. I was in Vrindavana at the time he decided to go to England, but my plane ticket was via eastern route back to Los Angeles. All the devotees at Back to Godhead were expecting me to come back to manage the magazine. Nevertheless, I should have adjusted things, changing my ticket, and gone with Prabhupada to England. But because so many of his secretaries and leaders were accompanying him, I lost my taste. I very much wanted to be with Prabhupada, but it seemed that even if I went along in the entourage, I would not really be with him. I would be painfully apart from him even while traveling to the same places. Unfortunately, I was also sick with envy of those who were serving him.
It reminds me of this lecture series Jai Dvaita Maharaj is giving, how to put up with the Hare Krishna movement. To put up with those different persons that, you know, they weren't like, I wasn't like-minded with them. And so in the name of being with Prabhupada, you had to be with people who you didn't really like. I was sick with envy, yeah. Prabhupada's 26th Second Avenue days were very special. I don't talk of them so much, but it has always been a source of inner pride for me to know that I was there. It hurts, therefore, when I sometimes hear devotees deride those memories. I remember one time an international Sankirtan leader came to the Philadelphia temple to hold a week of seminars on something they called Contact Sankirtan. During one of his lectures he said, "These are the times that count right now, not remembering Prabhupada from the old days." Then he told a story of when he was with Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles. He said that Mukunda Maharaj, who had been with Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue, came to see Prabhupada after several years of separation. In one of their first meetings, Mukunda said, "Prabhupada, do you remember the early days together?" And Prabhupada was supposed to have replied, "Oh, those are old stories." When the international Sankirtan leader told this incident, he looked at me and said, "Did you know that Prabhupada said that?" I replied, "No, I never heard that before." It hurt to think that Prabhupada had actually said it, although I knew at other times Prabhupada liked to talk of 1966, and he said those were happy days. What were some of the ingredients of those days that made it so safe and secure? One
of the main things was Prabhupada's complete accessibility at all times. He didn't have so many other things to attend to except take care of the devotees at his one center. His disciples all had menial but important services for him, and everyone was in complete admiration of him. He was our one and only guru, and we had to stop all other intellectual, sensual and spiritual interest just to follow him. Everything was focused on learning about Krishna from Swamiji, and if we had any doubts about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the way to resolve them was clear and open, asked the Swami. It was the kindergarten of spiritual life. He was always gentle and you were often physically close to him. He led us in singing the kirtanas and everything was filled with hope for spreading the movement.
The potency of those 66 days is not mere nostalgia. But the word nostalgia has bad press. In the material world, there are many nostalgia crazes, such as old car aficionados, Elvis Presley fans, etc. Genuine nostalgia, however, is not a craze or a fad or an industry. When I remember Prabhupada in the best way, it turns into prayer, and it leads to positive action for the present. When we were with Prabhupada in the beginning of ISKCON, we were all babies in spiritual life. Now we appear to be very grown up with many responsibilities, but it's good to keep the truth alive that we are actually babies and our spiritual master is protecting us. If now we have to perform austerities, enduring quarrels with God brothers and mixing with non-devotees, and if we have to do extraordinary things like accepting disciples, still the inner, simple, abiding truth is that I'm a spiritual baby and I'm doing this for Prabhupada.
By going back to remember my first year with Swamiji, I became aware that my relationship is actually the same despite the external changes. Prabhupada's devotees haven't become monsters forgetting their guru and taking advantage of his property. No, we were just like we were in the beginning. We eat when he says to eat, and we gave him our money, and when there is a doubt, we ask him. Prabhupada knew that there would be changes, as he wrote in Bhagavad Gita. There is always some upheaval in the material world. But if we keep our original Krishna consciousness intact, then our relationship with him is always strong. He gave us our beads and he told us to chant. He told us to offer prasadam and we do some preaching. This we can do no matter what the upheaval is, favorable or unfavorable. No one can take it away. And even through the external scene of 22nd Avenue has, even though the external scene of 22nd Avenue has vanished, I can go back for a special memory what it was like to be a spiritual child in a young man's body with Prabhupada as strong as a lion and a jester of his playing on the drum.
I prefer the 22nd Avenue pastimes just as you may prefer some others. So it is with the eternal associates of Lord Krishna. The gopis and residents of Vrindavan are so much attached to Vrindavan Dham that even if Krishna goes away, they stay in Vrindavan. They prefer Vrindavan to Krishna. They will remember Krishna in Vrindavan, but they won't leave Vrindavan. If Krishna is so unfaithful as to desert Vrindavan, that's his business. But the Brajabasis will never leave the land of his original pastimes. Okay, stop. I prefer the 22nd Avenue pastimes, just as you may prefer some others. So it is with the eternal associates of Lord Krishna. The gopis and residents of Vrindavan are so much attached to Vrindavan Dham that even if Krishna goes away, they stay in Vrindavan. They prefer Vrindavan to Krishna. They will remember Krishna in Vrindavan, but they don't leave Vrindavan. If Krishna is so unfaithful as to desert Vrindavan, that's his business. But the Brajabasis will never leave the land of his original pastimes. Sanatana Goswami informs us in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that the residents of Vrindavan wouldn't even believe the stories they heard of Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan. When Akura came to take Krishna from Vrindavan, all of Krishna's dear friends were very hurt and outraged. Akura explained that Krishna had to leave in order to give solace to his real mother and father, Devaki and Vasudeva. But when they heard that, the residents cried, "These are all lies. Krishna has no other mother and father but Nanda and Yasoda." They cursed Akura and called him a liar and an agent of Kamsa. In this attached mood, the residents of Vrindavan considered all other pastimes of Krishna to be a big hoax. And so I prefer to think of Swamiji at 22nd Avenue, in his room at night, shaking with laughter after we had all come back from the
Louis Abalpoya. "Be in all right, boys," he said. "Go home now, drink your milk and say your prayers. The store will be open at 6 in the morning. Jai O." We said, "Jai O, Swamiji, good night." And we knew that we were going to see him in the morning. I prefer that. Yes, I have to do something for Swamiji now, and I am. But sometimes I think that Swamiji should never have left the Lower East Side. He could have just stayed there and I could have stayed there too. That would have been nice. Swamiji could still be giving Bhagavad Gita classes 3 nights a week. I could have continued my work at the welfare office There was no need to quit. That's when all the trouble started. When Swamiji went to San Francisco, they brought him there to take part in a concert with rock and roll bands like the Grateful Dead. I never thought it was a good idea.
Next is a poem. It's called Prabhupada. It's part of a series. Each one is called Prabhupada Smaranam. I make it a big deal that I'm still alive and Prabhupada has disappeared, as if it's a huge difference between us. And yet it's just a thin wall soon broken through. Then, Master, wherever I go, will I be able to follow your instructions? Why haven't I asked this before? Why can't I know the answer? You said, yes, the ecstasy of separation from the spiritual master is even greater than the ecstasy of meeting with him. Then, let me touch this absence of you and celebrate it while walking down a hill strewn with green weeds and flowers. At every moment, as long as I live, I want to consecrate myself to you and bring you more disciples. My end will come soon, but now counts too, as I wake you from your bed and carry you to your Vyasasana and wash your face and look upon your form with care and fix your japa mala in your hand and sing to you and put your chatter on your shoulders and bow down again and again.
Personal association is for fools. 4:15. I am very much pleased for the nice sentiments you have expressed therein, but you should always remember that whatever we are doing, it is in the parampara system beginning from Lord Krishna down to us. Therefore, our loving spirit should be more upon the message than the physical representation. When we love the message and serve him automatically, our devotional life for the physic is done. Letter to Govindasi, April 7, 1970.
Oh, I see. One word wasn't so clear. When we love the message and serve him, automatically our devotional love for the physique is done. Oh. Strange word that he would use there. It means for the physical form of the guru.
Physique.
Yeah. Prabhupada's point is meant to encourage us and not to dampen our affections for him. He reminds us that we can take shelter of the message which he has brought, Krishna consciousness, even after the disappearance of Srila Prabhupada, and even after our own physical demise. If our affection for Srila Prabhupada were entirely dependent on the physical representation, then we would have ceased to serve him since November 1977. But there is no cessation in our relationship. Srila Prabhupada writes, he lives forever by his divine instructions, and follower lives with him. The letter by Srila Prabhupada to Govinda Dasi is not intended to be a dissertation on the entire nature of the guru-disciple relationship. There is other evidence in Shastra, as well as the evidence in our hearts and minds, which indicates that the personal form of a great soul is never forgotten, even after his disappearance. If we stress only the message that he delivered and neglect the person who delivered it, we minimize the importance of the pure devotee.
Srila Prabhupada sometimes compared himself to a mailman. In India, a mailman is called a peon. Here again, the stress is on the message which the peon delivers. He should not interfere with the delivery of that message or tamper with its contents. The mailman does not have to be an extremely qualified person as long as he faithfully brings the letter to your door. The metaphor of the mailman is helpful, especially when we consider ourselves as deliverers of the message of Krishna. But the example is incomplete. A mailman is not an important person in our lives. We see him only briefly, and post office technology will probably find a way to replace him by a robot. Our relationship with Srila Prabhupada is not like that.
Srila Prabhupada made it clear that we should not think of him as a teacher who gives some temporary help and whom we later give up. He said that a temporary relationship with the Guru is implicit in the teachings of the Mayavadis, but Vaishnavism teaches that the Guru is eternal. The Mayavadis sometimes compare the Guru to a ladder. One uses the ladder to reach a higher position but if the latter is no longer needed, one kicks it away. The physical form of the pure devotee is spiritual. He is a Jivan Mukta, a liberated soul, and his body should never be seen as material. His form is therefore worshipable in Guru Puj. And in this case of a great soul like Srila Prabhupada, even after his disappearance, his body is honored in permanent samadhi.
Another statement by Srila Prabhupada, which is similar to the letter to Govindasi, is, personal association is for fools. Prabhupada wrote this in a letter to a disciple who wanted to give up his service, Prabhu Udatta Desh, in order to be with Prabhupada. Prabhupada emphasized that a disciple should be satisfied serving his guru anywhere and not seek to gratify himself by going to see and touch the personal form. This remark by Prabhupada has specific usage according to time and place, and some of us were shocked to hear it. In fact, we sometimes replied, Prabhupada's association is for fools, then call me a fool, but I want to be with him. Srila Prabhupada had to respond to disciples who were feeling anxious about their separation from him, and he asserted that they were certainly together even though they seemed to be physically apart.
I remember on a walk with Prabhupada in Mayapur by the Ganges, he demonstrated that Mayavadi's attitude, that they stay with the Guru who helps them until they realize that they're one with God and the Guru is one with God, and then he pushes him away, and he pushed disciple Bhavananda, pushed him. We all looked at him. We thought we would never want to do that. Srila Prabhupada had to respond to disciples who were feeling anxious about their separation from him, and he asserted that they were certainly together even though they seem to be physically apart. Quoting a letter, "You write that you have a desire to avail of my association again. But why do you forget that you are always in association with me? When you are helping my missionary activities, I am always thinking of you, and you are always thinking of me. That is real association." August 1969. Next letter. "But always remember that I am always with you. As you are always thinking of me, I am always thinking of you. Although physically we are not together, we are not separated spiritually. So we should be concerned only with the spiritual connection." 1969. We might argue that when these letters were written, it was only a matter of geography and time that separated Srila Prabhupada from his disciples. They expected to see him again when he visited their part of the world, or when they traveled to see him. And yet, Srila Prabhupada said that he did not feel any separation from his own spiritual master, even though Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had disappeared for many decades. Prabhupada writes, "I also do not feel separation from my Guru Maharaj. When I am engaged in his service, his pictures give me sufficient strength. To serve the spiritual master's word is more important than to serve him physically." In the higher sense, there is no difference between the situation as it was when Prabhupada was present from 1966 to 1977 and the situation as it is since then. All that separates us is geography and time, as well as the purity of our minds and intentions. We should know that Prabhupada's message is more important than the physical representation, but it is equally important to be assured that
personal form is important to us even today. Srila Prabhupada installed the murtis of himself and he encouraged personal remembrances. For example, he wrote, "Who is taking care of my apartment? It should be cleansed at least twice a week, and on the altar of the deity, at least one incense may be offered daily." Letter, August 22, 1970. "Surely it pleases him that we continue to honor his apartments, his pictures and his murtis. It helps us to remember him, and when we remember the representative of Krishna, then we can remember his message, Krishna consciousness. Like it or not, we are attached. When we love a person, we think not only of their teaching but of their personal form and activities. As Prabhupada writes, the individual soul is embodied since time immemorial. It is difficult for him to simply theoretically understand that he is not the body. Therefore, the Bhakti Yogi accepts the deity of Krishna as worshipable because there is some bodily conception fixed in the mind which can thus be applied.
Of course, worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His form within the temple is not idol worship. Similarly, it's natural that we don't create a void image of Prabhupada or forget him in favor of the message which he brought. Even when we consider the Vani as all-important, the Vani itself has a form. Prabhupada's teachings come in a form of books, sound recordings, and impressions in the mind. It is not formless. Therefore, we take pleasure in recalling the messenger, our Lord and Master, who came from Goloka to tell us about Krishna. Next is Prabhupada's pleasure, 4.16. When Swamiji started dictating the Krishna book, he sent me the tapes. That was a special treat. He also wrote a letter and asked if Jodharani or someone could do paintings very quickly. He wanted 3 or 4 done per week. So we were off to a flying start on his new project, the Krishna book, and I was the typist. When I typed the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, I was the first one to hear about it and to tell the devotees. But with the Krishna book, it was much more exciting because we were hearing for the first time some of the personal pastimes of child Krishna in Vrindavan. When I would give classes in the Boston temple, I would repeat almost word for word the descriptions Prabhupada gave of Krishna stealing butter, Krishna showing the universal form to his mother, and so on.
One night during one of Prabhupada's visits to Boston, when we were still in the storefront in the Alston, he asked me to speak in front of the group who had come to hear him. Prabhupada would sometimes ask several disciples to lecture during the same evening. He did it to train us up, and I thought that he also liked to sit back and let the disciples do some of the work. He liked to speak himself, but when we spoke, he seemed to listen, and at the same time, he withdrew himself.